Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. This is a live event. In the dead of night, when thy winter wounds shall not be healed from the wind which howls about your being. In the dead of night, when your friends have gone and you sit huddled by the castle's fire. In the dead of night, when all is dark, who will you be tonight? The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KV at MTOR, ladies and gentlemen, your host, Colin Knott.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madam and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants. Welcome to another live edition of Night Zone Radio. It is Tuesday, May the 11th, 2010. As we continue to explore the paranormal and alien contact, we search for new and exciting guests in order to expand the information discussed on paranormal and extraterrestrial contact. Over the years, we have looked at the scientific aspect of paranormal and religious doctrine regarding past alien contacts, such as the Nephilim. We've examined the end days with Tim McHide and Bible prophecy, Nostradamus prophecies with John Hoag, astrological events with Dr. Ian O'Neill, Planet X with Marshall Masters, and ongoing paranormal events with Paul Dale Roberts and Shannon Macabre McCabe. We've checked into psychic healing with David Baker and Sandy, and fresh revelations on the paranormal with psychic Anthony. Tonight, we shall examine information contained in the Bible and religious teachings with a minister who has a firm grasp on the words and interpretation of the Christian Bible in relation to paranormal and alien encounters. Tonight, we have with us Minister Dante Fortson of the Las Vegas Ministry, Ignite Praise Fellowship, Las Vegas, Nevada. Minister Dante Fortson, next in the Night Zone.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KV at MTOR, you are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And indeed, welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone. What a great night to be alive tonight. News coming in from England, of course. The Conservatives have formed a government with the Liberal Democrats, a coalition government that will rule England, and Gordon Brown is, of course, stepping down. Tonight I have with me Minister Dante Fortson from Las Vegas, Nevada, a practicing licensed minister. Good evening, Dante, and welcome to the Night Zone.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Oh, more than welcome, sir. Minister Dante, we do appreciate the contact with us. This is a very complicated issue, and I do appreciate you taking the time out of your busy events to be with us tonight. Definitely going to be an absolute pleasure having you around tonight, I think.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time and answering the email and having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's very important that we get the information out to our listeners and in such a way that it's palatable. We have a lot of naysayers and doomsayers out in the world that are telling us where we're at and where we're going, and not much is left after 2012. So we need to get information out there so people can understand. And after reading a number of the works of yours on your website, I must admit, I do enjoy your style of writing. It is flowery, but it is definitely to the point, and your links are very, very accurate. When did you first start getting into religion and the paranormal as a simpatico piece of information?
Well, first, let me thank you for giving me the comments on the website. I started getting into the religion or paranormal from a religious aspect when I was about maybe 14, 13 going on 14, and I was really, really deep into vampirism, ghosts, hauntings, things like that. And then I'm not sure when it shifted towards alien abduction, but sometime between 13 and 14, I shifted into alien abduction, UFOs, and I was a real diehard UFO fanatic. I was obsessed with Roswell, the Independence Day movies, anything I could find on UFOs, books, movies, videos, all that. So right. At that point, my goal was to find out what they were. And I never had thought of it from a religious point of view. I just was content with the fact that they were from another planet or another, you know, another galaxy. And that was where my focus was. But during my research, I ran across some information on how to get in contact with them. And that means is channeling. And so I attempted, and I didn't think it was successful. But that same night, I had an experience which changed my entire view from these are beings from other planets to a completely religious search for the answers. I no longer held the belief that these were just entities from other planets or other galaxies, but these were something far more evil, and that was based on my personal experience that I had after trying to channel these beings.
Right. So would you say it was at that point in time that you moved further to the religious doctrine, if you will? Was it that moment that kind of put you on the path to become a minister?
Yeah, actually, that moment was the defining moment when I realized what I was getting myself into. And that is what put me, it didn't necessarily put me on the path to becoming a minister. It put me on the path to a deeper understanding, to trying to gain a deeper understanding into spiritual or supernatural phenomena. And from that moment on, the experience I had left me with a lasting fear of the dark. Before this, I was obsessed with the dark, and after this, I was no longer able to really just sit in the dark because the experience scared me so much that I wanted nothing to do with it anymore in the way I was involved with it previously.
Okay. Well, let's examine that experience a little bit, as much as you're prepared to tell us. But what was it that created the cause for your future?
Well, basically what happened was I tried to channel these extraterrestrials, and I asked for them to come. And during the night, I remember this specifically, I woke up. It was 3 a.m. Which later on I didn't find out any of the spiritual aspects of this whole 3 a.m. thing. I don't know how much of it is, you know, speculation or mythology right. or rumor, but it was 3 a.m. The experience lasted exactly 30 minutes. The strange part of the event was that when I went to sleep, I fell asleep with my lights and my TV on, and that was unusual for me because at the time I was really obsessed with the dark. And so I woke up, heard a buzzing noise outside of my window, sort of a high-pitched squeal. Then I saw a light come through my window. And from that point, I just remember my eyes being closed, and I remember this feeling of fear that came over me. And I could feel presences in the room. Now, I didn't want to look. I don't know if I could have looked if I wanted to. It was almost like your average abduction experience. But I don't believe
like
I ever left my room.
Like a paralyzation.
Yes, I felt the paralyzation.
Paralyzed.
Yeah, I couldn't move at all. And well, I was scared to the point that I didn't even want to try to move. I didn't even attempt to move. I just laid there, my eyes closed, and then I heard a drilling noise. Now I don't know if it was I don't know what it was. I just heard the noise. I felt my body start to shake, and I just remember praying. At that point, I just started praying. And from beginning to end, the whole experience lasted, it felt like, 30 to 45 seconds, the entire experience. And 30 minutes had passed when it stopped. As soon as I started praying, this whole experience just stopped. And I remember opening my eyes to a completely dark room. which is what caught me by surprise, because at 3 o'clock I had woken up and, you know, everything was still on. But I hadn't gotten
TV,
anything off.
The lights went, right.
Yes, the TV and the lights, they were off. And I remember the first thing I looked at was my alarm clock, and it was 3:30 in the morning. And that morning I didn't go back to sleep. I didn't go back to sleep until later on that night. I was scared to come home after school. When I was home by myself, I would open the front doors and the back doors as long as possible until the sun went down. And I wanted nothing more to do with the dark from that point. But the experience scared me so much that the only thing I could think to do was pray. And even then, it didn't hit me what had happened. It didn't hit me till later when I was watching A&E. And they used to run a show called, I believe, the Mysteries of the Bible. And they were talking about Ezekiel's wheels within a wheel. And at that point, I kind of got the UFO Bible connection, but I didn't understand it. So I started researching in the Bible for answers to what happened.
Right. So you actually started digging through the Bible around about 14 years old or so?
Yeah, right about 14 years old is when I really seriously started digging into the Bible for answers.
Right. Now, when you started to connect the information in the Bible regarding off-world creatures or creatures from another realm or a number of other ways you can say it, did your findings create any conflict in your religious study? Did it were there things that could not fit or did not fit?
Actually, no. Surprisingly, I thought that's what would happen when I started to study it. And the more I have studied it and continue to study it, the more I find that it fits in perfectly with what's going on with this whole phenomenon. And fortunately, I was blessed enough to be around people who were also interested in the subject. So they study too, and, you know, they get back to me with their findings, and we research stuff together, and we cross-reference each other. But no, so far I have not found anything that would bother me religiously. It's actually quite the opposite. Everything lines up almost to a T in the Bible.
Right. Yeah. In your writings on MinisterFortins.com, you briefly discuss revelations in the end days, but more importantly, in there was fallen angels outside the contract with God descending to earth and snatching women at will. Now this is a... this is a out of Revelations, is it not?
That passage is actually from Genesis chapter 6. What happens is Jesus makes a reference in Matthew 24, verse 37. He says that the end times would be like the days of Noah. Well, when you go to Genesis chapter 6, you find that the sons of God, they come down, they take any women that they choose. Some of the extra-biblical references, like the Book of Jubilees and the Book of Enoch, state that they also took men and animals too. So these angels came down, they took whoever they wanted by force. It wasn't just a voluntary thing. And then from there, when you get into the book of Daniel, Daniel makes a reference in Daniel 2, verse 43. He says, "They shall mingle themselves with the seed of men." Now, they is a personal pronoun, which means they must be something other than the seed of men, which... Right. Again, if we go to Revelation, which is what you asked me, when you get to Revelation, John makes a strange statement. The devil comes down, descends to earth. It says, "Woe to the inhabitants of earth, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows he has but a short time." So according to the book of Revelation, there will be at some point that these angels will descend, and one of these angels will be the devil himself. So you have it all throughout the Bible where it talks about the return of these beings.
All right. And they speak of heaven being off Earth planet. We've assumed heaven is up there in the sky, but heaven in the biblical terms is everything that surrounds Mother Earth. Am I correct?
Yeah, actually you are correct. What's interesting is that I was watching a program on PBS maybe about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and they were talking about dark matter and dark energy, and they were saying that we are only able to perceive 5% of the actual universe. There's energy coming from somewhere, and there is matter somewhere, but we just can't perceive it, which is interesting to me because the Bible makes that reference that there's, you know, heaven and all kinds of stuff going on around us all the time that we have no perception of. So I believe that the spiritual realm is all around us and not necessarily, I guess, it's not necessarily a distance, but it's actually going on all around us.
Right. It doesn't have a site specific. It is everything.
Yeah, I believe so. I believe that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to let you finish your thought there. But regarding these fallen angels, these are angels that have failed God or failed the universal energy and have been cast out, or have they just turned bad with the influence of Satan? I'm unclear as to how an angel becomes a fallen angel.
Well, according to the Bible, Lucifer, or actually was Hallel in the Hebrew, but Lucifer in the Latin. In Isaiah 14, it talks about his rebellion against God. He does the famous five I wills. This is found in Isaiah chapter 14. And all his I wills were, I want to be like God. I want to ascend above the heights of the clouds. Basically, he was in complete rebellion against God. And according to Revelation chapter 12, one-third of the angels took part in this rebellion with him. And so that's kind of the what leads to the fall of the angels. It's more of a spiritual fall in the sense of rebellion. And we find that all throughout the different cultures and mythology. We have Zeus who rebelled. We have Marduk who rebelled. We have the Anunnaki who rebelled. And, I mean, this is a reoccurring theme throughout all religions and different beliefs all around the world that at some point these beings that were created rebelled against their father. And so, according to the Bible, though, these other beings that took place or took part in the abduction of women and men and animals, they were a different group of beings called the Watchers or the Grigori. And the legends that surround these beings is that there were 200 to 300 of them that actually fell into this abducting of people and women and animals. And so when they did this, God took offense, and we find in 2 Peter and Jude, also the extra-biblical books of Jubilees and Enoch, that God had these angels imprisoned in what we call Tartarus, or the abyss. And the word Tartarus, it's not just hell, it's the outer darkness of hell. It's somewhere separate from hell. It's a place of torment or judgment. And the Greeks also have this legend of Tartarus. When the giants rebelled against the gods, they ended up being imprisoned in the abyss. So you get this reoccurring theme all throughout history, but that's basically what led to the fall of the angels is rebellion against God.
Okay, so there's a angel rebellion in heaven, and I use that word very casually, actually, in heaven. And these angels come down to earth to mate with man, to create their own race. Is that where I'm seeing this?
Well, what you have is you have this real strange, intricate plot throughout the Bible. In Genesis chapter 3, we find that the devil has already fallen. He's in the garden as the serpent. And most people picture the serpent as a talking snake, but it's not a talking snake. Part of the curse is that he had to crawl, which means before the curse he was not crawling. Another interesting thing to that is that the serpent is reptilian, almost like the reptilian account of the reptilians that we have today during these abductions. So something was going on in the garden that did not sit well with God, and it's weird from a spiritual standpoint, but anyway, basically, after Satan, Lucifer, deceives Eve, God declares war and says there will be two seeds. Satan will have a seed, and God himself will have a seed. He calls it the seed of the woman. Now, in Hebrew, that's impossible. It's grammatically incorrect to say the seed of the woman because the seed is in the man. And so right. God prophesies a virgin birth. Well, if the seed of the woman is going to destroy Satan, his natural reaction would be to destroy the seed of the woman. So first you have the incident with Cain and Abel. Cain sinned, so he's automatically disqualified, and Abel is now dead. So that does not work. God brings Seth into play. Seth is the appointed one. So now instead of him trying to kill off Seth, what the plan is to wipe out the human race genetically, to wipe out creation on a genetic level, because you can't have a seed of the woman if there are no actual seeds of women, no pure humans left.
Right.
And so you find a strange verse in Genesis chapter 6 that says that all flesh had become corrupted. And then it makes a reference to Noah being perfect in his generation. The word used there is the Hebrew word tamim, which means without physical spot or blemish. It refers to his physical appearance. And the more you get into these hybrid offspring, you'll start to see that they have different physical characteristics, such as extra fingers and toes, multiple rows of teeth. They're gigantic in stature. They have all these weird genetic flaws wrong with them. And so that seems to be the plan, is to wipe out humans on a genetic level and not just go directly at them and try to kill them like he did with Cain and Abel.
Right. Yeah, I can see how that would come together with the teachings of the Bible. Now the Nephilim, and the Anunnaki, would they be the genetically altered species, or would they be the actual fallen angels?
My personal belief, the more I've studied the Anunnaki, is that they may actually be the fallen angels. What's interesting is the story of Gilgamesh, and I believe the giant is Humbaba, I believe.
Okay.
He guards the forest to where the Anunnaki are living. And one of the things Gilgamesh does is go and kill him. So again, you see these angelic-like beings on Earth guarded by giants, and another hybrid, Gilgamesh, he was two-thirds god, one-third human. He was a hybrid himself, and he goes and kills these giants. But what's interesting is the story of the giants. The Bible, in Genesis 6, verse 4, I believe, it says that they were heroes or legendary men, the Hag-Gibborim. And we find that some of the most famous stories that we remember from the Greeks, the Romans, all the other cultures, are about hybrids. Gilgamesh, Hercules, Achilles, Theseus, Perseus. We find these hybrids, the Minotaur. That's what was associated with Theseus. So you find these weird hybrids all throughout history, and they are the famous ones that the Bible stated that they were. This whole phenomenon that's going on doesn't just seem local to the Bible, but worldwide.
Right. Yeah, and I can see how the alien abductions, as we know them today, I can see how they fit with these fallen angels coming down to Earth and capturing people and animals. Yeah, I could see how that would come together, Dante, very easily, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like that, I mean, it's exactly what Jesus said. He said, in the last days, it would be just like the days of Noah. His exact quote was, as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And then Jesus gives these strange warnings that on the surface it seems, you know, elementary. He says they were eating, drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage until the flood came and took them all away. Well, that doesn't really stand out because people eat, drink, marry all the time. But the only strange reference you find to marriage is that the sons of God took wives of all which they chose. That's the only reference to marriage in the days of Noah. Then Jesus gives another warning. He says, woe to them who are with child in those days, for these be the days of vengeance. Now, what's interesting about that is it may be an indirect reference to these hybrid Nephilim creatures again appearing on Earth. And it also is a reference to what John said about the devil has come down to you having great wrath. Jesus said, these are the days of vengeance. So he gave a warning to whoever's with child, which is very interesting. And the more you get into this subject, the more interesting it gets. But it seems to be that these fallen angels have once again started to do what they did in the days of Noah.
And that's why what happened with Noah happened, because God cleansed the earth.
Exactly. Most people think God just wiped out the earth for wickedness, but it was much deeper than that. It was a genetic corruption going on. And
right.
God wiped out the earth to preserve a pure humanity so it wouldn't be corrupted with these hybrids.
Right. Right. And these hybrids being the Anunnaki, Nephilim, and these fallen angels that are breeding with the daughters of men.
Yeah, I believe, yes, the hybrids, I don't believe that they just involve men, though. We also find different kind of weird hybrids in Sumer, the Shidu, that are like bull, half man, and then they have like the wings of birds. You find weird hybrids all throughout history. Lion men are very common. The Bible talks about lion-like men in Egypt.
Right.
You find lion-like men in Germany. You find the Minotaur in Greece. So you find a whole lot of strange hybrid type of creatures spread throughout history, and each time they are associated with the activity of some being coming down from the sky and doing something they're not supposed to be doing. It's a consistent theme, which seems like it's more than coincidence.
Yeah, and we have a statement from the virtual studio tonight from Marillo. It says, I think heavenly powers should cleanse the government of the evil in Congress. Well, that would be a nice thing. Would be a nice thing to do around the world, is come back to a world of peace. But I don't know if we will see it in our time. Dante, we're going to take a quick break for the bottom of the hour. Everybody take a quick washing break. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Don't go away.
Many ancient cultures from across the globe describe startling events that seem to be taking place now. Are they pointing to 2012, December 21st, 2012? Daybreak doesn't come. All remains dark. The world has come to an end.
2012 is kind of the beginning of upheavals in the world, rather than the end.
Is 2012 the year the cosmic clock finally winds down to 0 day, zero hope? 2012. Many ancient cultures from across the globe describe startling events that seem to be taking place now. Are they pointed to 2012?
Minister Dante Folsom next. You are in the Night Zone on BlogTalkRadio.com.
The revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him, to show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John, who bare record of the word of God and of the testimony of Jesus Christ and of all things that he saw. Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein. For the time is at hand. I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, saith the Lord, which is and which was and which is to come, the Almighty.
Fear not, I am the first and the last, and he that liveth and was dead. Behold, I am alive forevermore, and have the keys of hell and of death.
You are in the Night Zone on BlogTalkRadio.com. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, Caveat Emptor, 2012 is speculated to be the end of the world based on the Mayan calendar and other sources. If you are worried or unsure about it, then some uncommon sense, along with a literal Bible prophecy breakthrough, may help. Find out what kind of a year 2012 will be.
Tim McHyde
in the Night Zone. Watch for the listings.
Welcome to the shadows
of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And we have a very special night tonight with Minister Dante Fortson from Las Vegas, practicing minister that is bringing us the information regarding the Bible and off-world creatures. Dante, a question that came up in virtual studio. Do you follow the Wormwood theory or the Planet X theory at all?
I've heard a lot of theories about Wormwood. I know the Bible mentions it being cast into the sea and the waters become bitter and people die. So one thing that I believe is ruled out is it being a planet. Now, that's just my personal belief. If it's going to hit, you know, the waters and make the waters undrinkable, the planet would really decimate the earth and kill everybody without them having the need to drink water.
Right.
Another thing that I have heard is that the word Chernobyl translates into Chernobyl, which is very interesting too. But I'm not sure what Wormwood is. I believe that at some point something will hit the earth and make the drinking conditions of the water or make the water unusable. But I'm not 100% sure on what Wormwood is, but I do definitely believe that whatever the Bible is referring to is going to happen.
Right. That something is out there. Let's leave it at that. Whatever it is, as you say, the dark matter, there is so much of the universe we don't see, and it could be right on our doorstep, and we still wouldn't see it because it's dark matter. It's something we cannot measure.
I agree 100%. And what's interesting while talking about dark matter is that there's a verse in the Bible that says that the things that we do not see are clearly made known by the things that we do see. And I've come to the point now in my study that I think the Bible is a far deeper book than any of us can really, really imagine. As I go through there and start to see different verses and the more, I guess, scientific knowledge I gain, the more outstanding the Bible becomes to me. And so I think whatever the Bible is talking about when it refers to Wormwood and when we talk about dark matter, something is indeed out there, but I can't say for sure what it is.
Right, yeah. And I'm with you on that because I've had a lot of experts on the show and I still haven't got my head around it completely. I buy the premise. I just can't see governments not letting us know if they know, which you would imagine that they would. They would have a pretty good idea that, you know, that it would be out there and they would be getting us ready for it. But all I can detect from that is that either it's dark matter and we cannot measure it, or it's another one of those 2012 fallacies.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And one thing that you mentioned is the government not sharing information. One movie that I saw that was really underrated that made me think was The Forgotten. In the movie, the woman, she forgot about her child, but then she starts to remember. And in the end, you find out that there's something extraterrestrial going on behind the scenes. It's sort of a huge experiment. But what happens is that the government has no idea what they're dealing with, and not only do they not know what these beings are, but they are held hostage by these beings. And we may be in a situation like that. I mean, there's no way to prove that, but it got me to thinking that if these are indeed fallen angels that have a hatred for humankind and are in a desperate want or need not to be destroyed, the lengths that they would take. And right. it wouldn't be so far-fetched because the Anunnaki, according to the Sumerians, imprisoned the Sumerians and made them mine gold.
Right.
You find different things like that all across culture and history, that these beings from the sky made slaves of people. So it may not be that far-fetched to assume that we may be in a position like that right now and just not know it.
Very, very good point. In your writings, you warn of those off-world creatures, according to the writings, we as mankind will embrace. And in fact, they're not interested in helping mankind, but they only want to exploit us or our DNA or some genetic codes. Is this information, your understanding, is this based on the writings about the Nephilim? Or is there other portions in the Bible that kind of bring you to that point?
Well, I mean, there are at least five mentions. You have Moses who wrote Genesis. You have Jesus mentioning the wrath upon the people. You have Daniel that talks about then mixing with the seed of men, but he says they will not cleave to one another, meaning they won't get along. Whatever happens, this bond is broken. And you have, I'm sorry, it just blew my mind, but you have five people in the Bible. They talk about beings coming down and there being wrath upon people. Then you have the writings of the Sumerians who talk about these beings enslaving mankind. Then you go to the Greeks. You have the gods. They were always doing something mean or horrible to mankind. At one time, Zeus poses as a woman's husband in order to trick her into having sex with him. And so you find that whether they be the gods with the lowercase g or beings from the sky or the stars, they never have mankind's best interests at heart. They seem to, you know, do whatever they want to do, really. And
they seem very self-centered.
Never for the better. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Very self-centered. They seem very, very self-centered. It's their pleasures. It's not the pleasures of the world. It's what they want to do, it seems.
Very, very much so. And it seems, like you said, they're very selfish in nature. Everything they do is self-serving, and most of the time it ends up being evil.
Right.
Even the hybrids. The hybrids have these traits. You have Hercules, who killed his music teacher. He killed his family. And even when he was dying, he managed to kill somebody else. You have Achilles,
right,
who was famous for killing everybody in his path. So you have their offspring kind of develops this trait too. So whatever these beings are, they don't seem to have mankind's best interest at heart, and any offspring that come from them don't seem to have mankind's best interest at heart, which seems to be why God wiped them out in the flood, and also after the flood, he calls for their mass extermination.
Right. So do you think Hercules, as such, was a breed of off-world creature and human?
I believe so. I believe Hercules may have been... Here's what I believe concerning mythology. I believe a lot of the mythology, there's truth in everything. There's some bit of truth in everything. And I believe a lot of the mythology chronicles the activities of these angels on Earth. And one thing Paul warns about in the Bible is he warns about being deceived into worshiping angels, because they're so much more powerful than us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do believe Hercules, if he existed, was a combination of a hybrid, or the combination of something spiritual or heavenly and something physical or a human. And the Greeks say that, you know, Zeus came down and had sex with a mortal woman to produce Hercules. So it's not entirely different from what the Bible says was happening in Genesis 6. It's not entirely different from what was going on with the Anunnaki. It's not entirely different from what was going on in South America. So all over the world, the Native Americans, they have some of the same beliefs. So whatever was going on, I believe it did indeed happen. Now, whether or not, you know, there was an actual individual named Hercules, that's really up for debate. But I believe that there were hybrids created at some point or multiple points during history.
Right. And do you think... Given that, why do you think that the Bible codes their information so much? Or is it just that we are not reading it as it was written 3,000 years ago or whatever?
Well, the Bible, it seems to code the information for a specific purpose. You have Matthew chapter 13, verse 11. Jesus says, "Unto you it is given to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven." And who he was talking to, Jesus had a lot more than 12 disciples. A lot of people get it confused. Jesus had a lot of disciples. He had a group of 70.
Yeah.
Then he had a group of 12. Then he had a smaller group that was, consisted of three or four disciples. So he had disciples, a lot of them. And the inner circle, the 12, he was telling them, "It is given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven." And what that signifies is that those who really, really had a spiritual relationship with him would understand what was being put out there. The Bible isn't just a book anybody can pick up and read like a novel. It's something
right.
You have to search. And the Bible says line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. And so what that means is you have to really read the whole thing to really understand what is going on. And it seems that it was written that way on purpose. And that's one of the things that is kind of proof of its authenticity being from God. If the way it's written, if you rip out Genesis chapter 1, you still have the creation all over the rest of the Bible. You can find it in John, you can find it in Psalms, you can find it in Isaiah, Jeremiah, and any individual chapter you rip out, you can still find the rest of the story somewhere else. The story of Noah is not just in Genesis. So that being said, it's written that way that only that elect group of people that really believe that the Bible is the true word of God and really follow its teachings can really, really understand what it says.
So why do you think it was done in that manner, Dante?
I believe it was two reasons. I believe one reason is so that you can tell who has really done their research, who really, really knows the Word of God.
Right.
And two, if you know that, you can discern the false teachers from the people who are teaching right. I mean, you can find somebody who's teaching something and saying it's from the Bible, but when you ask them where it is, they never show you, or they
right.
dance around the subject. I've had that happen before. And that to me shows they haven't read the Bible. Or when you have somebody who makes up their own teachings, if they have not
right.
read it, chances are they will have something in their teaching that is contradictory to the Bible, and you'll be able to discern who that is. And I believe it is
right.
written in code like that. For those two purposes, maybe a lot more purposes. I believe, like I said, the Bible is a book that is probably far deeper than any of us have even gotten close to realizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I often wonder what it would be in plain text, not the text that we have identified or come to some kind of rational understanding, but the true manner in which it was written. These stories that we read from in the Revelation, in Genesis, in John, Matthew, throughout the Bible, these are personal stories that are through the eyes of these people. And I often wonder if you could just go back and see that story actually unfold, then I think you would key the Bible a lot easier than we do in the 21st century.
I definitely agree, and I believe one of the keys to really, really understanding the Bible is going back and looking at the original Hebrew for the Old Testament, excuse me, the original Greek for the New Testament and the parts that are written in Aramaic. I believe that is key to understanding what is really, really going on in the Bible, because a lot of the translation is based on the knowledge, we'll say from the King James Bible, is based on the knowledge that they had in 1611. But there are some strange things going on in the Bible that if we went back and translated the Bible now, we may change some things. One example would be in 2 Kings, Elijah is taken up to heaven by an angel on a flaming chariot. Well, this flaming chariot is called a Merkaba. And in Hebrew, it simply means leaper or vehicle. It doesn't
right.
necessarily mean chariot, but at the time, you know, cars had not been invented in 1611.
That's right.
So,
chariot was the form of transportation.
Exactly. It just means a form of transportation. So whatever language they were using, they were trying to describe it in their language. And even the biblical people who reported this were trying to relay this in their language. It flew out of the sky. The angels picked Elijah up in this chariot. And so now we go back and you find in Israel, one of their tanks is called the Merkaba. So
right.
if we were to go back and translate some of these things now, we may get an entirely different spin on it. And that's why I think it's very important for people to go back and read the original languages and try to get a definition of what is really going on. And one of the best places to do that is on biblos.com. You can actually click a word and have Strong's Concordance, and you can actually see the original word and do a little bit of word research as you're reading.
Biblos.com.
Yes.
Biblos.com. So all those people out there that are looking for more information, that's going to be a good resource for you. Now, you know, the Bible in itself, without getting hate mail from all kinds of religious sects throughout the country, the Bible in itself, in my opinion, is an interpretation based on the church's dealings with citizenship and the likes. And I'm very concerned that the Word of God was actually changed to fit the religions of the day, if you see where I'm going with this. I'm concerned that there has been a manipulation with organized religion over the thousands of years to make that Bible fit their powers and observations within their church. Do you detect any of this with reading the King James Bible compared to reading a Bible from Greece, let's say?
Basically, I agree with you to a point. I believe that the Bible has been used to manipulate certain aspects of society. What I have not found is that the Bible has been changed in so drastically of a manner that it is not what's found in the original text. Fortunately, we have stuff like the Dead Sea Scrolls, and we still have a couple of copies of the Septuagint as they existed when they were translated. And, I mean, you find little words that were translated. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, for example, it says, "The earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep." But when you go back and study the Hebrew, it says, "But the earth became without form and void, and judgment or misery was upon the face of the deep." And you find the references are a little strange, but it hasn't been changed so drastically as to be something completely different. You find other words, like I mentioned earlier, Merkaba is basically vehicle, but they translate it from their concept. But what I found from the King James Version versus the other versions that claim to be more accurate is that it seems as though the King James Version kept as closely to the ancient languages as possible. A lot of the new versions, the NIV, for example, it doesn't have as much of a spiritual slant as the King James. We talk about the Nephilim. The NIV leaves the word untranslated. And what I found from people I've talked to is they don't even bother to go look up to see what that word Nephilim means. So to them, it's just a word there. But to those reading the King James, we see the word giants, and we're like, oh, that's interesting, giants. We may move on, we may study it. But the word Nephilim not being translated kind of takes away from it. They change another verse that talks about basically anything to do with spiritual connecting with the physical realm or interfering. They have a slant towards the more natural. So it depends on which version of the Bible right. you read. But to me, the King James has been the most closely translated, in my opinion.
I think you're right. I read quite a bit of King James, and I was quite impressed with even the negative implication against kingdom, for instance. Because King James obviously was monikered by the King of England at the time. Tell you what, Dante, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, let's get into ghosts and demonic possession.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back.
You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287.
The ancient Sumerian text, just in a very broad overview, basically tell us that these Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com. Program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Although the Night Zone takes all precautions to bring you quality information, the Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered by our guests or host. We remind all of our listeners, KVADMTOR, Minister Dante Folsom, next. Night Zone Radio is a research tool for those who wish to investigate, understand, and become informed on paranormal activity. The following information is presented in good faith as we continue to seek the truth, thinking outside of the box. And we remind all listeners, KVADMTOR.
Was originally aired live long before the advent of high fidelity. As a result, you may be facing crazy transmission problems so common to old radio. We hope, however, that any variance in audio quality will not take away from your pleasure.
For as the lightning comes forth from the east and shines as far as the west, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man. Your host, Colin Mack.
Not much question at all, but there's life throughout the universe. We're not alone in the universe at all. No truth.
And as we go into the final 8 minutes in the Night Zone, we have with us tonight Minister Dante Fortson from Las Vegas, Nevada, practicing minister, licensed minister in the state of Nevada. So, Dante, what are ghosts? What is demonic possession?
Well, here's the theory about the demons. We'll start with the demons before we get into the ghosts. Many people believe, myself included, that the demons are different from fallen angels. The demons come about when you have the offspring of fallen angels and humans die. They're not fully angelic. They're not fully human. So what happens is they're stuck in this sort of, I guess, limbo. You find that demons need to possess a body. Angels seem to be able to materialize a body, like the angels in Sodom and Gomorrah. They touch people, they talk with people, they eat with people, they do all sorts of things. The demons, on the other hand, don't seem to be able to do this. So that's where we sort of believe the demons come from. The Book of Jubilees, the Book of Enoch, they talk about these demons coming from the flesh of giants. And again, those are extra-biblical books not found in our Bible. Now, ghosts. Right. Is an interesting subject. I believe that certain activities can encourage or open gateways to demonic or spiritual activity. Now, one incident we have with these beings is in 1 Samuel. Saul goes to seek the witch of Endor. And basically, Saul had put out a decree that anybody who calls up the dead or had a familiar spirit was to be put to death. And this woman was hiding out, and Saul goes in search of her because he wants to get in touch with Samuel after Samuel died. So now Samuel, who is dead, he appears to the woman, and the woman says, "I see who you wanted me to bring up." Saul asks a very strange question. "What do you see?" She said, "I see gods coming out of the ground," or the word that we translate as gods is usually translated angels. She said she sees them coming out of the ground. And then Saul asked for a description. He wanted to know that whoever she was talking to was indeed who she thought it was. So I believe that whatever these beings are, Saul was worried about something else appearing in the place of Samuel or something that he didn't want to be talking to coming through. And so with that said, I believe that ghosts may be deceptive spirits who take on the form of loved ones or familiar people or whatever kind of entities people believe are in their house. I believe that these may be angels, it may be demons. I'm not sure exactly which one it is. But usually there's some kind of occultic activity in the background of the person who is being haunted, some kind of involvement with the occult. It may be tarot readings. It may be channeling, playing with a Ouija board, like you've seen in The Exorcist. She played with the Ouija board right before she got possessed. So there's no telling what people may be involved in that will open them up to these kind of spiritual activity. And, I mean, this is all throughout history. The Native Americans believed in the tricksters. They could take on almost any form they wanted to. These alien beings, as we study them more, we find that they take on multiple forms depending on the culture, and that they appear as whatever the culture has a tendency to believe in. Mm-hmm. So whatever these are, I don't believe that they are sincerely the ghost of dead relatives, but I believe that they are something else posing as those relatives in order to blind us to what is really going on.
And again, going back to that, the fallen angels will come to Earth. We will embrace them, thinking they are superior and here to help us, when in effect they are here for their own good and to do us wrong in one way or another.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly, 100%, that whatever they come as, they're going to present themselves as benevolent. The Bible even talks about the devil presenting himself as an angel of light. Over and over again, Jesus and Paul and Peter talk about the last days. He says, be not deceived. He keeps talking about a coming deception that will be so strong that it would deceive the elect if they weren't watching out for it. And the only,
right.
This is just my personal opinion, the only thing I believe that could be so strong as to turn the entire opinion of the world around on religion and everything we know is the appearance of an alien presence. I mean, some people say evolution is the deception, but that doesn't seem to be accurate because they're going back and forth on it constantly. What would be more concrete to people is if beings showed up and said, look, we created you, this is the truth. People would accept that.
Right.
Whether or not
Yes, they would.
Yeah, our own species lies to us. Another human being will lie to you, but immediately people would be trusting of beings from the stars because they already have the pre-assumed position that these beings are good, they're benevolent, they're higher on a spiritual level, they're here to help us. They can't do any wrong. People have that type of belief about these beings, and they don't even know anything about these beings. And that's why I believe that would play a part in the coming Great Deception.
Well, Dante Fortson, Minister Dante Fortson, I can't believe it, but we've burned through an hour already. Now, you have a book, Religion and Relationships, that's up on Amazon right now, is it not?
Yes, I do. That was my first book I wrote. It's about pretty much the kind of people that God chooses. Most people think that God only chooses somebody that's super holy or, you know, super religious, but it's not. I mean, David was an adulterer. He was a murderer. Abraham was scared, so he gave another man his wife for a while. Moses killed a man, was a fugitive. So that's basically what the book is about, the kind of people that God chooses, and that is on Amazon. I also have another book that will be coming out soon. It's called As the Days of Noah Were, The Sons of God and the Coming Apocalypse. And it details this entire Days of Noah, the UFO phenomenon, the abductions, and everything that's going on with our time now.
Okay, well, when that comes out, you make sure we know about it so we can chat with you some more. Minister Dante Fortson, Ignite Praise Fellowship in Las Vegas, Nevada. Sir, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me. I definitely enjoyed myself.
Excellent. Minister Dante Fortson, ladies and gentlemen. And all you have to do is Google Dante Fortson and or Ignite Praise Fellowship in Las Vegas, and you will see this gentleman's work, and it's worth looking at. It's great reads, and it's done in such a way that it won't send you to sleep. But we have to get out of here. Blessings on your household.
Hey, Night Zoners, got a minute? I'm sure we all know someone who is experiencing difficult times during this recession, either with unemployment or financial problems, or in relationships. I have friends like that. I would like to remind you that we are all in this together. So if you have friends experiencing hardships, support them with your advice. If you have acquaintances who are having rough times, nurture them with your friendship. Show them kindness. If you have family members who are having difficulties, show them your love. And if you have people in your life who have almost given up, throw them a lifeline of kindness. Remember the golden rule, but for the grace of God, go I. Blessings upon your household. Until then, next time we meet.
This has been a Night Zone production in association with BlogTalkRadio.com.